You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Oh, in the first hour we were open, it was just like shoulder to shoulder, standing room only. There was a beer angel in that building that day. We were going through beer so fast, and all we had were these little, we were kegging in Cornelius homebrew kegs. Rolling around, 20 minutes before we opened, I was standing there in the back with the keg going, carbonate, damn it!
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. Hope you've been having a killer week so far. I most certainly have been. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I would just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to rate and write a review of the podcast. Now, why do I want you to do that? Well, you have to imagine that when someone is looking for a new podcast to listen to, what do? They scroll down, they look at the ratings, they read those reviews, and if those reviews say that the podcast is amazing, that I'm a great host, that my guests are incredible, and that I ask insightful questions, well, perhaps you will be the person that helps sway someone's decision to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, and that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today on the podcast, I am very stoked to be bringing back the Vox and Hops Metal Brewer Talks. Today, I am joined by Cameron Kanachavati, the founder of Mother Earth Brewing. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 352.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm with Cameron Kanachavani, the founder of Mother Earth Brewing. Cameron, how are you doing? Let's start with an easy one.
I'm doing well. How are you, buddy? Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
No, I'm very, very stoked that you hit me up. And this is something that happens sometimes, that I get a message via the website and I respond to everyone, and I really try to, but sometimes it turns into something like this, and I'm happy that it has. Let's just, the shittiest question that we'll, you know, go through tonight, the one that I like to start with, the one that I like to poke people with right at the beginning, as do most people that ask questions in interview settings nowadays. How have you been coping with the glorious years, plural, of 2020, 2021, and most certainly, hopefully not, most of 2022? How have you been dancing through these wonderful times?
Well, I guess that's kind of a two-pronged question for me, because on one hand, there's the way that I've been personally coping with it and my family, right? And then we have, you know, our business as well, which is impacted in a, I guess there's some overlap there, but in a completely different way. So on a personal note, I've always been on the side of just follow the rules. And so I don't know, man, I don't like to get all political about it and stuff. It just, whatever they tell me to do, whatever the path of least resistance to freedom is, that's just what I want to do. Just get me the hell out of this whole situation. So that's been my stance personally. The business, I mean, craft beer took a big hit. Well, I mean, a lot of things took a big hit. But yeah, once they shut all the restaurants down and stuff, I mean, that's 50% of our business just vanished. So it was pretty crazy. But, you know, we're still here, and a lot of businesses aren't. So I have to be grateful for that.
What do you think ties into that? And this is a tricky question. Is it certain businesses had more of a creative approach as to how to keep their customers engaged, or was it more of a location thing? I'm sure there's a lot of answers to this question. I don't know what the right one is myself there.
Yeah, I think luck has a lot to do with it too. I mean, we just happened to be positioned. So we founded the business in 2010, right? That was like, we were just ripe. I'm sorry, the craft beer scene was ripe for us to just, we made it. You know, we just got in there in time. Before it got really, really hyper competitive. And so we had a head start, and we have some pretty substantial distribution at play, you know, grocery stores and liquor stores. And so we really leaned on that during COVID. If you're the type of business that relies solely on, you know, a hand-to-hand exchange of goods or services, like let's say you're a brewery, for example, that doesn't can their beer, and you needed people to come in and belly up to your bar.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have just been I can't even imagine coming in every day and standing in an empty bar just watching, like, writing rent checks, being like, I'm host.
It's, you hit on a bunch of things that definitely hit the nail on the head. Having distro, I've spoken to a bunch of brewers, and they were definitely, especially big breweries, people that were used to selling kegs to to restaurants and stuff, they had to be much more creative and pump out way more cans than they would have into distribution than before.
So totally.
They had to be creative. I'm glad that you're okay. On a personal note, aside from the business, how did you cope throughout everything?
Pretty well. I mean, I live in Southern California, so it's temperate climate. It's not like I was confined to inside, right? I have friends who live in Chicago that have, in Utah and, you know, other places where they've got inclement weather. And when you're confined to the house with, let's say, 2, 3, 4 kids, they were like, dude, I just want to bash my head against the wall. We were pretty good down here. We just hunkered down, and I was able to work from home and, you know, listen to metal and drink beer and work and surf and do whatever else. So it was great.
That does sound pretty good. I was very lucky that for the first summer in many summers, I wasn't touring Europe playing all the festivals, which is super fun, but you're missing all these IV young children. So to spend those moments with them without the having to tell my bandmates basically that I want to take a summer off. So that was guilt free, but you know, it's been a few years now, so I'm itching to get back there.
Actually, that's one thing I will say about the pandemic. I know that this has been covered in popular media, but I think a lot of people, and me included, really had a chance to reevaluate the type of relationship we want to have with our kids and how much time we spend with family. And I mean, it was like a revelation, I know, for a lot of people. You know, don't sweat the small stuff.
It's true. 100% true. And appreciating these each little moments and each little growth that your family has is something that we were taking for granted. So, and all the little small pleasantries, such as going on tour and performing in front of a bunch of people, even though I'm, you know, I love it every night, but sometimes I'm not as into it. Now I miss it very much. I'm actually bringing back a very cool thing with you, something that I haven't done since before the pandemic. I wanted to check before I sat down. I didn't have time. A metal brewer talk. So I'm happy that you hit me up to motivate me to have more of these, a Vox and Hops metal brewer talk. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, talking about music, and talking about craft beer. Now, what beer are we going to be sharing virtually? What beer do you have that we're going to be sharing tonight?
All right, cool. Well, so right now I am drinking Wolf Mother Hazy IPA. We actually released this like today. It's not really out at distribution at all. This is the first time I'm having it. So
really?
Cheers.
Cheers to you. It looks delicious. On my side, I pulled out something from my cellar that beers don't normally live very long in. This is from Kanawaki Brewing Company. Their head brewer, their founder, one of the founders, Drew, was a metal brewer. He's been on Fox and Hops before. Love them to death. This is from their 4th anniversary. It's called Hell's Gate. It's a barley wine that has been aged for 22 months in wild turkey barrels. It's going to be massive. It's got the hops, yeast, vanilla, water, barley. It's going to be massive. I'm going to crack this, and I would love, love, love to hear about the very first beer that you ever had, your first beer that you drank. Do you remember that one?
That I drank, not that we made, that I personally drank. Oh, boy. Oh, it's going to be so shameful. I mean, it's got to be like Tecate or something, just garbage. I mean, I probably shoulder tapped for it, for sure. Actually, it might have been a 12-ounce can of MGD that I stole from my parents' fridge and just sat shamefully in my closet and drank like half and got wasted when I was probably 16 or something. I don't know.
Amazing. Cheers to you. Thank you for hanging out.
Yeah, cheers to you. Thanks for having me.
Woo! This is boozy on the nose. 10.2%. That wild turkey's really smashing through. And the vanilla, though. Very interesting.
We do some barley wines from time to time, and yeah, they're up there. We have actually a series called The Four Seasons of Mother Earth, and every quarter we release a new big-ass beer, basically.
That's smart.
And and some of them are wild. Some of them, you know, toasted coconut and salted caramel and all types of stuff. And they're
this is sweet. It's the vanilla's kicking. Boozy. Cheers to Kaniwaki Brewing and Drew and the rest of the crew, Amanda, for their 4th anniversary. Long life to them. And I had to have a big beer with Mother Earth Brewing's founder. Let's keep going. I'd like to hear about the soundtrack of your youth when you were growing up in your parents' or guardians' house. What music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
They listened to your garden variety soft rock, whatever it was on. Now, at the time in Southern California, it was K-Big 104 and Coast 103.5. And that was... you know, Amy Grant and Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston and all that stuff. And so, you know, that's really all I knew. And then, of course, I got to high school and all my buddies were like, "Oh, bro, have you heard the new Poison?" And I was like, "No, have you heard the new Lionel Richie? It's sick." And so I was somewhat insulated until I discovered... that's my pup. Until I discovered grunge in the early 90s, and then that sent me on the path to metal, really. And then I graduated from grunge to punk, you know, stuff like Black Flag and Circle Jerks and Dead Kennedys, Descendants, all that type of stuff. And then I think I heard Pantera for the first time and was like, yeah, I need this.
That's a good path. My dad listened to Poison, so it was the opposite there. I remember finding his CD, because we had like Columbia House back in the day, which I'm sure you know what it is, but some of my listeners might not. You would get this magazine that comes to your house, and you would choose which CDs you want mailed to your house, or cassettes even before that. So my dad would take a chance on a bunch of hair metal stuff that he liked very much. He wasn't so much into grunge, though. It's funny. He was probably from that mentality of the more hair metal that was mad at the grunge era, whereas you went straight towards that into basically skater punk rock or hardcore punk rock, and then into Pantera. Do you remember your first show, the first show that you ever went to go see?
I do. My mom took me to see Alanis Morissette Jagged Little Pill tour I was like 13 years old. Yeah, it was awesome.
Taylor on drums, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Great, great fucking human right there. That's awesome. Do you remember that vibe of that show? Were you a fan, or was it more like your mom's thing and you just went with it?
Oh no, I was absolutely a fan, yeah. Because that was kind of the segue from pop to grunge. You know what I mean? I would put that in the same category as like the way No Doubt found a way to bridge... pop and punk, like ska music and punk and stuff like that. You know,
but she was hard. Like her lyrics were hard, her performance were hard, and the shows were great. I just watched that documentary that they put out on HBO, I believe, about that time period of her creating that album and then touring it. They were intense. So shout out to Alanis Morissette.
not typically the show that I brag about the most when people ask, but I'm really glad you did. yeah
I'd love to hear your brewer story. How did you go from stealing your dad's beer and drinking it shamefully in your closet at 16 to owning a massive brewery? At what point did home brewing come in? At what point did let's take it slow, let's dance into what is the beer that made you realize that beer can be fun?
Ooh, yeah, my gateway beer, huh? That's tough. So I was actually living in the Bay Area at the time that I kind of discovered craft. And I would pick up stuff from, you know, back then Trader Joe's was a really big player in like craft discovery, because that was one of the only places that I remember like mass market that you could get stuff like Mendocino beers, you know, like White Hawk and Red Tail, and those, and North Coast, Red Seal, and stuff like that. And back then too, Blue Moon was considered craft.
Mm-hmm. So it's one of them that night. I know the night that I discovered craft, I mentioned it thousands of times on the podcast. Summer Slaughter, Atlanta, and we bought a 6-pack of Blue Moon and a 6-pack of Sierra Nevada. So,
oh yeah,
absolutely
solid. Yeah, yep. Yep. They were go-to beers. And so I kind of, cut my teeth on stuff like that. And then I started diving a little bit deeper, going to some cool bars up there, beer bars. Toronado in San Francisco was one of my biggest influencers. Anyway, so I moved back down to SoCal, and my folks were down here, and I started exposing my stepdad to craft beer. And at first, he was like, he was a wine drinker, so he was like, "Oh no, beer is piss. I'm not drinking that." And,
beer is the lower class liquid.
Oh yeah, that he totally had that attitude at first, and so I was like, "Listen, let's go do a bar hop, and I'll take you to some really cool places with good beers." So he dug it. And so for Christmas, I bought him like a massive Magnum bottle of Chimay White and a homebrew kit. And so we popped that thing open, we started homebrewing, and I mean, the rest is history. We got super into it. And then Sprint, who I was working for at the time, was announcing a bunch of layoffs. And I mean, they were just hemorrhaging at the time. And so
I'm just imagining 2008, that whole financial crash.
Yeah, exactly.
Crash.
That's exactly okay. Yep. 08, 09, wow. And they said we're going to lay off like 4,000 people. And they actually had the balls to say, if you don't have a family and you can leave, we're asking you to just walk away with a severance package. So I called Dan, my stepdad, on the other line, and I was like, this is it. Like, I don't have a mortgage. I don't have kids. I'm not married. We need to do this. It's now or never if we're going to start this business.
Wow. So you took that severance package and turned it into what Mother Earth Brewing became. Wow.
Yeah. It floated us while we got our act together and put our plan together. So
isn't that crazy that something as big and as horrible as the whole crash of 2008 has totally pushed you in a completely different direction?
Yeah.
Into a whole new world, something that is your passion. It's weird how the world does that to us sometimes.
I know, totally. So that it just and then we got a really small building. It was like 2,200 square feet or something. And we had 26 gallon stock pots in the back, like behind the trash cans. People would come in. We had lawn signs out in the street that said, like, brewery this way.
Wow.
And the city took them down in, like, 30 minutes, but that was enough time. Code enforcement was rolling around, like, you can't put signs up here. That was just enough time for the right people to see the signs.
And then word of mouth, yeah.
In the first hour we were open, it was just, like, shoulder to shoulder, standing room only.
Unbelievable.
There was a beer angel in that building that day. We were going through beer so fast, and all we had were these little... We were kegging in Cornelius homebrew kegs.
Amazing.
Rolling around. 20 minutes before we opened, I was standing there in the back with the keg going, carbonate, damn it! I mean, it was so ghetto.
This is a movie. No? This is like a movie. There could be a movie about you, Cameron.
Totally.
And then that success. So, you're like that guy that gets on stage and... It's packed. there was no shitty show.
There was no shitty show.
You went straight to the full room. It's amazing. So from there, it grew and it grew and it grew. Before we go into that, I want to touch on where you're at now and how things have grown. You've mentioned some things that I want to dig into, but I want to talk about metal and beer. It's Vox and Hops. Why does metal and beer work so well together? And I think that you touched on something before that I imagine... is a big reason why it is, and I think it stems back to those Pantera Home videos.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people grew up, especially in our age bracket, that grew up watching those videos and seeing this is what metal is.
Yeah.
So you end up associating partying with metal, with drinking, with beer. What is your take on beer and metal?
Well, I think, so let me clarify real quick. I'm going to speak to craft beer and metal specifically. I think regular beer and, or macro beer and metal, I mean, it's clear. I mean, a lot of people like macro beer, but I think what makes, what the reason that those two things, craft beer specifically, very similar is that it has a counterculture element to it, which I think metalheads really appreciate.
Absolutely.
I also think that there's a certain intrinsic value that it has in terms of even people that don't play an instrument, or that, let's say, don't even like metal. I have a lot of buddies who can't, they won't listen to it themselves, but they'll go, I absolutely respect musicians that play that style of music. It's kind of this universal respect that, you know, even non-fans of the style. And so people, I think, appreciate the nuance of it, even if they don't necessarily partake in it themselves. Now, on the side of the people who do partake, magnify that times a thousand, right? They're just so passionate. Like, metalheads are really passionate people, and that style of music, it can be very emotional. And so craft beer also, although it may not seem like it on the surface, is like a form of expression. You're kind of living through, you're living vicariously through the expression of the brewer, which is also like living through the artistic expression of a musician. And so maybe I'm going too far there, but that's how it makes me feel.
No, you're right on track.
And then culturally, obviously they're pretty intertwined. You know, I know a lot of guys that they may not be full-on metalheads, but when they get in the brewery, for some reason, it's an energy thing. You know, it's that like groovy, like percussive sound that really like gets them into the mode of like creating and working hard too. Because if you were just sitting down to like paint watercolors, you may not get the same effect from a metal track. But when you're stomping around in a puddle of water like a little kid, you know, making beer, I don't know, it just seems appropriate.
There's definitely like a community aspect of it too. Being outsiders, out of the mainstream, out of the big markets, the fans definitely associate to that. You see another metalhead walking in the streets, you tend to tip your hat, depending on what shirt they're wearing, depending on what age we are, because as we're younger, we're a bit more elitist, but as we get older, we understand everyone has their tastes, and if they're a metalhead, it doesn't matter which band shirt they're wearing. And it's the same thing in a craft beer bar. If I'm in a craft beer, I'm going to make a friend, because we agree already on something so important that's a part of my vital humanistic self, and that's that craft beer is amazing. So there's a sense of community that's really interesting, and also a similarity that I've discovered by hanging out with a bunch of brewers and knowing a bunch of people that work in the industry is the sense of helping each other out. Knowing that, I'm missing this hops. I know that this brewery down the road has excess Citra, let's say. They'll give it to me and then I will get them back or something. It's the same thing in the band industry. I'm missing a band member, let's say, and then we borrow a band member for
a whole
tour.
Human.
You know, but it happens. Can we borrow him for a show? He's filling in for a show. Cryptopsy does it with Ollie Pinard, who plays in Cattle Decapitation now, so he's not available. We're going to get Dom to replace him. It's this community aspect that I think really ties metal and beer together, in my opinion, too, as well.
Yeah, I would totally agree. Like you said, the conversation starter alone. I mean, if I saw a guy wearing a PBR shirt on the side of the road, I would never stop and be like, oh yeah, they've been around since the 1800s or whatever. That's cool. Let's have a conversation. But if I saw a guy wearing like a Cerebral Brewing shirt, you know, out of Denver, I might be like, oh my God, I was just there at GABF like 3 months ago. And then boom, it leads to, you know, an hour long conversation.
I love it.
And same thing with metal. You like you said, you see a guy with a shirt on and all of a sudden my wife and kid are back at the pizza shop and I'm in the parking lot being like chatting it up.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
Let's dig back into Mother Earth Brewing. Obviously much bigger than that first, you said 2,000 square foot original space. Now you have two places. You got Vista, you got Boise, Idaho. Talk to me about expanding and why Idaho. That one confuses me.
Right. So, gosh, tell you about expanding. That's like a long story. It feels like 5 lifetimes have passed in the last 11 years. I've had 2 kids. I got married. I've moved. The pandemic, all that stuff. But anyway, digging deep, deep for this one. Well, let's start with why Idaho. So we went to Idaho because we were really on the cusp of like a major growth spurt. And Idaho is a very, very rapidly growing place. Boise specifically is just on fire. And I think my stepdad saw that. He had kind of had the foresight to see that it was getting ready to do what maybe San Diego had done years before. And so good on him for that. But also they I think wanted to go to a place where that was less populated, that they could retire eventually. And so that was one of the places that they went to look. It all worked out very well because that state has really embraced us. It took a little bit, right? I mean, we were like the Californians going to like pillage their lands for resources, you know? And so it's totally different now, but I would say the first 2 years, that was the proving grounds. I mean, it was like, show us why you belong here. And so once we were able to demonstrate that we weren't just there to exploit their state, you know, half of our like management moved out there. Yeah. Oh, we were fully committed. Yeah. Dan, my stepdad, and my mom both moved out there full time. So they live just outside of Boise in Eagle. And so we were all in. And so once people started to realize that, then it was all good.
What was the acceptance from the other breweries already there in Boise, having a big boy like Mother Earth moving into their territory? And it's funny because we were just talking about the community and how open everyone is. So I'm curious how this ties together in reality when they're afraid you're coming to take their clients away.
It's hard to say for me because I'm still in SoCal. So I'm probably not as suited to speak on that as like Dan is, but from what I saw all the times I was there, they were actually pretty cool. Like you said, I think the brewing community aspect sort of superseded any of the resentment that was underlying from like the residents of Idaho. You know what I mean? And I also think that there's a certain level of healthy competition that they were welcoming because some of them even told me this, that they recognized that we were bringing a quality product from one of the most competitive markets in the country for beer. And so I think a lot of them thought, hey, bring it on, man. You want to bring San Diego beer out here? Let's do this. We're doing our thing. You do yours. And there's room for everybody. Now, I don't know. Dan may have a different story. I have no idea. We actually haven't talked about that, which I need to. That sounds like good dirt that I haven't dug up yet.
That's how my mind works. I apologize for that. Another interesting question that as you were speaking, I've heard that the secret to the San Diego beer scene being so good and so vibrant early on was because the quality of water is there's something about it. There's the minerals in the water that's different than elsewhere in the world. So I'm curious, brewing in Vista, California versus brewing in Boise, did you have to adjust for that aspect, different water sources?
So the second part of it, to answer the second part, yes, we had to make adjustments, absolutely, because the profile is different. The idea that the water in San Diego is better than a lot of places, I would have to actually disagree with
it's
that.
It's probably some San Diego brewery that made up this myth.
I would say so. That sounds like some snake oil stuff. Yeah. 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 I mean, it's not bad water. I drink tap water, but I don't know. That sounds a little bit
I heard it was something about the minerals in the water or something because of the mountains. But there's mountains near Boise as well, too.
Though. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the water, that was one thing that definitely was a motivating factor is there's, you know, the water situation in Idaho is quite a bit different than California. Mm-hmm. So.
Because even here in Montreal, I've heard breweries that had to adjust from winter to summer because the water coming from the city in the winter obviously is much, much colder. So in the summer, water coming in is freaking hot. So it takes them way longer to cool down that water and get it down. And so when they're transferring, it's a challenge to adjusting. And then it messes with their recipes at the same time or how they treat each beer.
I believe it. Yeah, I hadn't considered that, but yeah, totally.
Hmm. Interesting. Another thing that you spoke of, you went straight into big distro. Now there's two schools of thought on breweries nowadays. There's the big distribution grocery store route, and then there's the hype, come to me, you need to buy your cans from me, there's no distribution, limited releases, exclusive release events. Why did you guys go the more bigger distribution route versus the hype route?
That's a really good question. We've talked about this many, many times, and this is a question that a lot of craft breweries are grappling with now and will be, especially in the post-pandemic era.
Exactly.
Because do you want to put all your eggs in the, like we were talking about earlier, the exchange basket? I don't know that we really had, I'm sure there was a lot of conversation around it, but it just kind of happened. Like, we're not the type of business and like my family and I, so we're family owned, right? It's my stepdad, me, my mom,
it's amazing.
My wife, my uncle, and my father-in-law. And like when we were ready to grow, we had investments from, we just bring in a new family member so we didn't have to go to, you know, an investor or a bank or anything. So a lot of the decisions we've made have really come pretty organically. Like they just kind of, I feel like in some regards, they just happen. Like we do what we feel is best at the time, and that kind of morphs into like a strategic plan. It's like, okay, we did this and it's working really well, so we'll continue to do this as long as it like pays dividends back. But yeah, you're right. I mean, a lot of people have to sort of, they're at a crossroads, right? It's like, do we go this way or that way? At the time, we just started bottling and stuff to supply demand in San Diego. San Diego is such a thirsty place. Southern California in general is so, you know, just population dense. So how else do you get beer out to the people? You can't expect millions of people to come to your tap room, and there's just too many choices,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Competition is still, yeah.
It is, yeah. So we had to go, you know, we had to go out. But I don't know that I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that we've never been like a super marketing forward brand. You know, we're not the type of brewery that just like dumps hundreds of thousands of dollars into like talking about ourselves or trying to convince people that our beer is good. And so, you know, doing all this like exclusive stuff just wasn't in our cards. I'm not saying it's the wrong way. I buy beer from breweries just like what you've described, but it just wasn't in our destiny.
I think it sort of stems into the timing of your brewery too. I think that hypothetically, had you opened, let's say in 2017, you might have rethought things, but back then it was the way to sell beer. Basically, there was probably a handful of people that were doing more of the exclusive hand to customer release system. But, yeah, it's obviously working for you, and I was just curious to poke that question because it's definitely happening here in Montreal and Quebec. You're seeing a lot of mad hype breweries doing crazy things and doing really well, and then there's this perception in the craft beer elitist enthusiasts that if you're in a grocery store, then your grocery store beer and then Untappd ratings will suffer because of that fact alone. Which is ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, some of the best beers in the world are carried in grocery stores. But also, I just refuse to stand in line for beer. There's just too many good beers out there. I just don't feel... I'm speaking as a consumer now, right? I don't need to... I'm not going to wait 4 hours to like, fawn over, you know, some like, rare something or other when I can go to the nearest beer store and get something that... I mean, I don't know, unless there's something I can't physically get any, like if someone makes a beer with like some low grade blotter acid or something and you have to go you can only go get
and,
it
and it's
that,
only
that,
good
you know.
For you know 26 hours after they package it, then it's gone
exactly once it dissolves it's gone.
Does that mean that when you're creating releases that you would never want people to wait in line? Is that something that would be important?
Oh, no. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that at all. If we had the type of brand that would command a line of 100 people, like sleeping out on the curb, I would welcome it.
Okay, which definitely happens here, yeah.
Do you know how much work it takes to manage programs like that? Mm-hmm.
I've seen my friends grow many gray hairs in the past 3 years, and shout out to Masorum Brassatorium, which is exactly who I'm thinking of as I'm asking many of these questions, because they are Montreal's most hyped brewery, and they are turning 3 years old in August, and they are the most hyped brewery happening just about in Canada right now, so... Shout out to them. Let's dance into a collab idea. Have you done a collab with a metal band? I'll start with that question. If not, I got a follow up.
We have not yet. We have not done a collab. We have had opportunities with some what I would consider to be very notable names in metal. I'm really glad you brought this up. This kills part of my soul every time I have to say no. The problem is that I'm really the only one in the family with this
passion.
Like closet passion, right? And so bringing like an opportunity like that to the table and saying, we should make a beer called Mother Earth Goat Whore IPA. It basically everyone in the family is like, oh, what? No. It's like non sequitur, so I usually kill it. Now, unless if there was someone that had a much more neutral identity themselves, like let's say some like instrumental prog band, like Animals as Leaders, for example. Let's say Animals as Leaders wanted to do a beer. And I could be like, hey Dan, you gotta hear these guys. They're just such sick musicians, and they just want to do something. And he would listen to it and be like, oh, yeah, listen to that ripping guitar solo. Let's do it. But as soon as someone starts growling, he's going to be like, no, it's not Mother Earth.
Okay, so in his mindset, extreme metal doesn't fit with Mother Earth.
That's correct.
Interesting.
Yeah.
If no offense to Dan, if he listens to this, and I hope he is, if you could pick a band, your favorite band that is possible and a realistic collab, because I can make things happen. What band would you like to make a collab with if it was just for you?
Ooh, man, that's really tough. I listen to so much different music. Okay. If you ask me today, just because of what I'm listening to right now, I am like really, really heavy on the new Allegion and the new Shadow of Intent. I think those are both albums of the year right now.
You know they're my friends, right?
Oh, are they really?
Yeah, totally. Both awesome. Of them. They're all Vox and Hops alumni. All of them. I was just with Riley from Allegion like 2-3 weeks ago when he came through Montreal. We went and drank a beer together, and I know that Allegion wants a beer, and I know that he lives in San Diego. Dan, come on. And Allegion, but you have to show him the new tracks where he doesn't scream.
Yeah, you're right.
He's a voice of an angel.
I think they growl on every track though. Well, Called Home has a lot of cleans, but I think there's still...
You just turn it off before
there's
them.
There's still some screaming in there.
Turn it off before them.
Yeah. I'll just go mute.
And Riley runs a video game company, so that's cool too.
Oh, no. Here's what we need to do. Tell them that I need a copy. I need an instrumental copy of Damnum.
Or, oh, yes. Or also, you know, they also did that that Rush cover, which has no screaming.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
Yeah.
I need to get on that.
Yeah. Shout out to Dave Otero, who mixes them as well. Another Vox and Hops alumni, and he's killing it.
I had Elysian, by the way, at my list of... So, fun fact, I used to do some reviews for Lambgoat, just volunteer. And I had Elysian at the top of my metal release list for 20... I think the last one I did was 2018 for Apoptosis or whatever.
Talk to me about doing that. Talk to me about writing for Lambgoat. Where did you find the time? How did that come about? How did you get into that whole thing of writing about metal while running a very popular brewery?
So just in the same way I reached out to you, I reached out to them. I used the terminology like closet metalhead earlier. I feel like all of us are just like, we just want someone to validate like our taste in music. And sometimes I get so frustrated that I have so few people to share this like love with.
There's so many people in South California. You need to get out.
Oh, yeah, but they're not making kids' lunches at, you know. Yeah, I could go out to, you know, the local metal bar, but, you know, I'm a 40-year-old old man now, so.
So are they.
I need to.
You'd be surprised. Amazing.
I'm sure I would. So I just emailed them. I emailed them and said, hey, I can write pretty decently. Like, both of my parents were teachers, and so I feel like I can put together a pretty sensical album review. And sure enough, dude emailed me like within hours and was like, actually, I could really use some help. I'm overwhelmed, and by all means, you know, feel free to jump in. And so that was kind of the start of it. But I ended up not being able to do it for more than about 2 years because, and maybe it was even less, I'm not sure. It was so labor intensive. Like, writing reviews is, I have total respect for people that do this. Cause a lot of them are volunteers. A lot of guys don't get compensated to do that. And when you write a number of them, especially when you have sort of like your signature voice, you find yourself repeating yourself quite a bit when you're like trying to describe like very nuanced qualities of an album or music or whatever. And so I would sit there. I mean, it's the most painful process. I mean, what I would do is I would listen to albums, and then I'd move my favorites into a playlist. So I had them all isolated, right? And then when I would go to review it, I would listen to it in a number of different conditions. In my car, with headphones on only, at my desk. So I had that way I could formulate an opinion dedicated to it, distracted, different audio qualities, and sort of take like a holistic approach to evaluating it. But then there's the writing process. Oh my God. Like, I'd be Googling, like, synonym for shredding. The amount of organization it takes to put something that, like, because it has to be coherent or no one wants to read it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the Vox and Hops album review crew. Cameron feels your pain, and I appreciate each and every one of you. How much of it was your decision to review, or were you being handed albums that needed to be reviewed?
A little bit of both. I would say I really want to write a review on this. They would just kind of like feed me releases a couple of weeks before, you know, it came out, you know, media package or whatever.
Exactly, yeah.
Some of them I dreaded.
Is there a review that you did? And I don't know if I can ask this. Is there a review that you had to do that you wish that you could take back?
I'm trying to think of what it was. The answer is yes, because I ended up like I said, I have to listen to it so many times, mm-hmm. And every time I listened to it, I was like, I really don't want to blast these guys. Just because I'm like so fatigued, like maybe there are some redeeming qualities in this that I'm like not hearing or seeing. I'd have to go back and look. So I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus right now. Oh wait, I got one. Sorry, I'm going to throw one. We're obviously not doing a collab with these guys. I had to review Into Eternity.
Okay, they're back. And you know they're back.
I know. And the musicianship is great. I get it. I'm not a fan of, like, the siren scream, like, style. And sort of like the fantasy stuff. And so, yeah,
that was
not my jam.
That was the most painful review you had to write.
I don't want to say that for sure, because there may be more, but that one kind of
comes to mind now. Cameron, this has been amazing. I have one last question. Classic Vox and Hop wrap-up question. Probably doesn't happen to you very often because, you know, you're making lunches for your kids and you're running a brewery that has many two locations, massive distribution, you're a closet metalhead. But every once in a while, it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
Hangover cure? It's got to be a big, greasy burrito. There's just no other... I mean, I don't know that I've ever tried a hangover cure that worked. Gatorade and a big, greasy burrito. That's it. Actually, I have a better one. I used to live with a guy who was a paramedic, and he had access to IVs.
No way.
And that is that's the honest truth. The only way you're going to get over a hangover is if you can get someone to give you a big bag.
And you put it in your veins, or you drink it? You
don't
drink.
Oh yeah. Oh no. Yeah, you gotta get an IV started.
Intravenous. But, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have someone that can start an IV on you and get you hydrated, that is, that actually works.
Interesting.
Right? The greasy burrito thing is just like a like semi-effective wives' tale. Like the IV thing, like, is medically what you should do.
Interesting. 350 interviews. First time I've ever heard the IV answer.
There you go. I'm here for you.
Cameron, thank you so much for taking the time. Talking to me about life, talking about metal, talking about craft beer. This has been an absolute pleasure. I can't wait to come down to hang out in the flesh with you, to enjoy some of your beers. I'm really, really looking forward to that. But until then, let's do a massive cheers. Thank you. Cheers.
Hey, massive cheers. Thank you. You're the best.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right today. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, I love Metal Brewer Talks. I gotta bring them back. I'm so stoked that Cameron hit me up and that encouraged me to have this conversation, to bring back the Metal Brewer Talks. I love talking to metal brewers. I love talking to artists, and brewers are most certainly an artist in my mind. It's something that I absolutely do believe. They create beautiful things. They are constantly experimenting. They're constantly pushing the boundaries. And Mother Earth Brewing is absolutely doing that. This was a killer conversation. Mad shout out to Cameron for hanging out with me. I had a blast. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcasts mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive 2 emails a month that will contain all the details of everything that has happened recently in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You will get to see which episodes I've released recently. You will get to see which episodes I have coming up. You will get to see which albums the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently. You also get to see which albums Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist. But not only that, you will also be the first people to hear about any new projects I have in the works, and I have a lot of them, trust me. There is just so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. I'd hate for you to miss a single thing, so sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcast. I hope you have a killer weekend. I will be back next week with 2 episodes yet again, one on Tuesday and another on Friday. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.